originally he was from Minnesota, and he is a lifelong Christian Scientist, as well as a graduate of Principia College, where he was a member and reader in the Christian Science Org, president of his house, and a member of the cross country and track teams. He earned a master's at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. John started his career in finance primarily on the marketing side and entered the nonprofit world about 20 years ago as the first direct development at Arden Wood, where he served from 1998 to 2004. He did Longyear Foundation and Museum in capacity, during which time he purchased from the Mother Church Zetti's Homes at 8 Broad Street Lynn and 400 Beacon Street. In November of 2010, John returned to Arden Wood as executive director and CEO. John is an active member of Ninth Church of Christ Scientists, where he has served in all capacities, most memorably as second reader and a Sunday school teacher. And I love this next comment. He is unlikely to ever be permitted to leave his post on the House and Grounds Committee. And he has done so much to oversee a lot of activities there, along with our beloved Joe DeFrisco. John also volunteers in the reading room at SFO. John and his wife, Sherry, and daughter, Alma, live in San Francisco. And now we welcome John Mitchell, with the title of his talk being The Timeless Relevance of Christian Science Reading Rooms. John?
Edie, thank you. And hello. When I was first asked to address the annual meeting of the jointly maintained reading room at SFO, I was taken aback. While I've loved and served many years as a volunteer, as a representative, a board member from Ninth Church, San Francisco, it never occurred to me that I might one day serve in this way. Yet here I am, feeling both humble and honored, and very grateful to everyone for zooming into this meeting today. It's a privilege to be with you all, truly. I've loved my association with the SFO Reading Room over the last 15 years. I love knowing there's a haven from the world in the midst of one of the busiest international airports in the world. There's no proselytizing, no overt marketing, no call to prayers, just a gracious presence that welcomes anyone in to feel and find the Christ. I love the fact that this reading room sees literally thousands of people pass by day and night. Its window messages lift the heart during off hours, and the welcoming thought of the attendant invites anyone to stop by, even only if to take a deep breath before pressing on with their busy life. That's the very nature of a Christian Science reading room. I wanted to be a part of this place, and so I made time to serve at least one shift a month, sometimes even on Christmas or Thanksgiving Day. It's always rewarding. When I lived in Boston and was a local member of the Mother Church, I volunteered to serve in two reading rooms, both no longer there at this time, one on Copley Square across from Trinity Church, and the other in the Financial District, directly across from the old State House and just steps away from where the Boston Massacre took place in March of 1770. One thing you should know about me is I love history because it gives us context, background, and context lends itself to insight. And insight, as we as students of Christian Science well know, makes all the difference in one's understanding of both ideas and actions. So throughout this talk, you'll hear more details than you perhaps might like to think to know, you want to know. Always with the aim, though, of gaining a better understanding of the timeless relevance of Christian Science reading rooms. Now, anyone who has served in a reading room has stories to tell. about the challenges of talking with those experiencing homelessness and despair, or those with an agenda to debate theological issues, or those expressing sheer curiosity, such as the person who made this comment to me. As a trained scientist, I've never seen the word Christian and science in the same pairing. Can you explain that? And then there were those whom our leader, Mary Baker Eddy, describes as among the millions of unprejudiced minds, simple seekers for truth, weary wanderers athirst in the desert, who are waiting and watching for rest and drink. She urges us to give them a cup of cold water in Christ's name and never fear the consequences. And those perceptive words are in our textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, next to the marginal heading, Receptive Hearts. Now we're talking. And honestly, we're talking even when the visitor appears to be less than savory. In those situations, I'm grateful for Jesus' reminder in the Sermon on the Mount from Matthew. He maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. Mrs. Eddy gives new meaning to Jesus' words when she writes, love for mankind is the elevator of the human race. It demonstrates truth and reflects divine love. And that's from the First Church of Christ Sinus in Mycenae. If you think about it, the concept of the reading room is entirely consistent with the beautiful wiring of our leader's thought and with her ever listening to God. Listen to what she says in Retrospection and Introspection. My childhood's home I remember as one with the open hand. The needy were ever welcome, and to the clergy were accorded special household privileges. End of quote. The open hand. I just love that. To me, a Christian Science reading room is our open hand to the community it serves. And in the case of the SFO reading room, it's a community as wide and diverse as the whole world, one individual at a time. What's more, our leader made the reading room a forever provision, as it's clearly defined in the Manual of the Mother Church, Article 21, Establishment, Section 1. Each church of the Christian Science denomination shall have a reading room, though two or more churches may unite in having reading rooms, provided these rooms are well located. End of quote. Do you see how powerful context is? It reveals both the foundation, the church manual, and the mission, outreach to the world, of the jointly maintained reading room at SFO. No matter where a reading room is located, it can be somewhat intimidating to serve there. But I will never forget a key point that our wonderful Committee on Publication for Northern California and CSB, Eric Nelson, shared at one of his seminars. Essentially, he said, we don't have to be authorities on Christian Science when we are asked a question, nor do we have to give the perfect answer. Instead, we simply share what our own experience has been in Christian Science, how it has animated our life. That's the most important thing to say, and is what the questioner is most interested in hearing. What a relief that is. I liked the idea that to serve in a reading room is to be ready always, as we know from 1 Peter. You have to be fully and prayerfully prepared and present, fully in the moment, ready for anyone who walks through the open door to receive what's in your open hand. One of my favorite interactions while serving the last couple of years took place when a brilliant young woman in her late 20s from Shanghai, China, came in and sat down. She said she felt compelled to come in. She was a CPA, an auditor with a large international accounting firm, and was weary from constant travel, living alone, and based in Ohio. She wanted to meet someone special and feel fulfilled. At that moment, I was led to share some beautiful passages from the Bible. She said she had never read the Bible and had grown up with no religion in China. During our hour-long conversation, I shared citations that gave comfort to a troubled and burdened soul. Sitting in the reading area, she spent a little time reading the Marble edition of the King James Version of the Bible that we sell, she spontaneously purchased until it was time to close up at 10 p.m. She left smiling, uplifted, soul-fed. That simple interaction also fed my soul, and after closing up, I didn't even remember driving home. I flew, rejoicing in gratitude to God that he had given me the opportunity to share, to provide rest and drink to a weary wanderer. To me, interactions like this one are the most compelling evidence of the timeless relevance of Christian Science reading rooms. Now, let's dig a little into context, the context of Mrs. Eddy's lifetime, to gain some insight on the origins of a Christian Science reading room. Until the 1880s, libraries per se were male-only establishments. Eventually, in that same decade, segregated reading rooms were added inside libraries for women. These sections had fewer books and only those appropriate for the female intellect. Instead of an abundance of books, there was more desk space for the purpose of letter writing. This first concept of a library reading room was intended to protect women from male library loafers and to keep women in their proper place. During this time, the idea for a Christian Science reading room came to light. It would be designed for both men and women, with no segregation in terms of reading material or access. The first reading room opened in Boston in 1888 in the Hotel Boylston, on the same floor as Steinert Hall, just across from the Boston Common near Tremont Street, in what is now known as the Boston Theater District. At first, the Christian Science Reading Room operated as a dispensary of literature and services for those who could not pay for Christian Science treatment or transportation to church. It also afforded a gathering spot for Christian Scientists. A Christian Science Journal article described it as sort of a, quote, club room, and one reason for having so large a place is to afford room for the conference and other meetings of the Christians of the Boston Church of Christian Scientists, and also for the sessions of the Christian Science Association. And that's from the September 1888 journal. This particular model proved to be unsustainable. Finally, in 1900, the provision for reading rooms as we now know them today was added to the manual, and the rest, as they say, is the history we're all familiar with. Mrs. Eddy wanted to ensure that all her writings and authorized literature would be available to the general public, a real challenge in the early years of Christian Science. It is expected that all our leaders' works, as well as the publications of the Christian Science Publishing Society, shall be available to read, borrow, or purchase in every reading room. Most of all, she wanted reading rooms to be accessible to the general public, to be well located, as the manual states. One who is new to Christian Science might well ask, is that all? Well, knowing Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy through their writings and efficacious healing work, we can resoundingly answer, of course not. We know Mrs. Eddy was a lifelong, voracious reader, so to me, the intention of a reading room holds even more appeal. In his biography, Mary Baker Eddy, Years of Discovery, Robert Peel writes about Mary Baker as a young girl. Quote, there is bound to be an ambivalence of attitude in the child who loves nature passionately, but is kept by ill health from a wholehearted, unthinking participation in nature's energies. When the children were playing together, Mary would every now and then slip away and be found later on top of a great rock, reading. It is not surprising that her references to the beauties of the natural world so often have a literary quality, as when she speaks of the singing brooklets and bright berries of bough, generalized epithets of the ear and eye, rather than the sharp, sensuous immediacy of physical experience. What added perspective's blight to nature in those years was probably not just a bookishness, although she announced at a precocious age that when she grew up, she would write a book. It may well have been the sense of that ill health gives of being a little different, a little alien, in a world which healthy people seem to take for granted. Peel continues, the liveliness of her mind and her love of long and unfamiliar words are apparent in all her early writings. That's the end of that quote. And I'm certain all of us here today would agree that her later writings attest to that same liveliness and love. They never leave her writings. And thank goodness, because words are windows into the realm of Christian Science. And for that reason alone, we should not be at all surprised by the endless relevance of a Christian Science reading room. But there's more to a reading room than just words. Peel also writes that when Mrs. Eddy was establishing her church, quote, in 1891, she was 70 years old, just starting her life work over the next 20 years of her life, end of quote. Revelation and reason based on the depth of her life experience inspired every manual bylaw and their practical ramifications. For instance, based on the premise that each of us is to work out our own salvation, in other words, without the help of a religious hierarchy or intermediary or a missionary, reading rooms are devoid of any airs or posture of proselytizing. They are purely intelligent and practical entities, which is why they would naturally attract seekers and weary wanderers, in addition to students of Christian Science. One of the most prescient aspects of the manual bylaw is that it clearly establishes a unified and consistent form of outreach for each branch church. It dovetails beautifully with the responsive reading citation from Psalms in last week's Bible lesson on life. Quote, I have not hid thy righteousness within my heart. I have declared thy faithfulness and thy salvation. I have not concealed thy loving kindness and thy truth from the great congregation. We have marching orders from on high. Each branch church is expected to look ever outward to fulfill the clear definition of church that we all love. And I'm going to read it aloud here, so please feel free to join me since you're all on mute. Church, the structure of truth and love, whatever rests upon and proceeds from divine principle. The church is that institution which affords proof of its utility and is found elevating the race, rousing the dormant understanding from material beliefs to the apprehension of spiritual ideas and the demonstration of divine science, thereby casting out devils or error and healing the sick. End of quote. Like a church, the Christian Science Reading Room is in plain sight to all mankind, in sharp contrast to a club, which is often hidden from public view, except for perhaps for a peculiar flag or a discreet sign or symbol. Why so hard to find? Because it's for members only. Instead, we see the Christian Science Reading Room is the encouraging, open hand, unconditional, and eager to uplift all mankind. Here's a question for us. How often do we pray to support the Christian Science Reading Room as a healing presence in our community, as a presence that uplifts the neighborhood, protects the neighborhood, and maybe even startles the neighborhood awake to a different reality? It's a peace-filled place for earnest longings to be revealed and responded to. It's a quiet place for individual study, and where one can find a safe and comfortable community, just the visitor and the librarian attendant, to more deeply explore the Word. What an invitation the reading room is for us as practicing Christians to share the fact and the proof, our own healing experiences, that He sent His Word and healed them and delivered them from their destructions. We know that's from Psalms. Beautiful. The reading room is a non-judgmental and discreet oasis. It's an uninterrupted place where ideas can be tried out, shared, developed, researched. Its presence, its vibe, is all about healing. Even when we don't know what we're looking for, healing, or needing anything. Just think of the countless blessings reading rooms have been privy to, if not instigated through the years. More evidence of ongoing relevance. Given the proviso that reading rooms should be well located, leader clearly intended Christian Science to remain open and to operate in the mainstream of society, in the public eye. In many parts of the United States, Christian Science reading rooms are ubiquitous parts of the downtown landscape. In her book, In Search of Grace, by Kristen Hahn, she speaks of, quote, breezing by the Christian Science reading rooms prominently centered on main streets all across America, end quote. This is notably consistent with the admonition, nay, the expectation, emblazoned on the cover of the Christian Science textbook. Say it with me. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. And with this awesome responsibility comes the practical provision for a quiet space for reflection away from daily responsibilities and endless interruptions. Let's put this concept of a quiet space for reading and reflection into a larger context. How many times do we hear people don't read anymore? Well, I did a little research on reading. Listen to this. Time spent reading for personal interest varies greatly by age. Individuals who are 75 and over read an average of 44 minutes a day, whereas individuals 15 to 44 read just 10 minutes or less per day. That's from a survey taken in June of last year. According to a recent survey of the Pew Research Center, an average reader reads up to 12 books a year. Michael Simmons, a writer for Business Insider, published this report on February 25th, 2020. Bill Gates reads 50 books a year. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook aimed to read at least one book every 2 weeks. Elon Musk, for those of you who are Tesla fans, grew up reading 2 books a day, according to his brother, and for quite a time read 10 hours a day. Arthur Blank, co-founder of Home Depot, reads 2 hours a day. Mark Cuban, owner of the NBA Dallas Mavericks, reads more than 3 hours every day. And Warren Buffett reads up to 5 to 6 hours per day. I don't know how many hours Christian Scientists read or study each day, but I would expect the number is significantly above the average. What's Seth, our leader in science and health? You know it well. Quote, go and take the little book. Take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey. Mortals, obey this heavenly evangel. Take divine science. Read this book from beginning to end. Study it. Ponder it. It will be indeed sweet at its first taste when it heals you. But murmur not over truth if you find its digestion bitter. End of quote. Clearly, the admonition to study and ponder doesn't jibe with the modern concept of one and done. And skimming through social media doesn't count as quality reading time. We are all strongly urged by our leader to dig into our pastor and her other writings. I have a confession, and I share it as added context. I have struggled with reading my entire life. Many times in my childhood, growing up on our family farm, my dad would say, workers are not readers. They're out getting things done. And so I have always felt anxious when I read, worried that I'll be caught not working or helping, or that I'm wasting valuable time. Or I simply fall asleep within minutes of starting to read, especially something serious or profound. This almost finished me in graduate school. Yet I know from asking many friends about their reading habits that if you're taught to love to read, it's a lifelong love and adventure, just as it was for Mrs. Eddy. And so I've most definitely come to appreciate reading and reading rooms the hard way, without a natural love of reading, yet with an ever-growing awareness of the vital role they play in our world and in mine. I've always appreciated the fact that we refer to ourselves as students of Christian Science, that we're all learning, growing, shedding, renewing. In No One Yes, our leader writes, reading my books without prejudice would convince all that their purpose is right. The comprehension of my teachings would enable anyone to prove these books to be filled with blessings for the whole human family. End of quote. That includes all of us, and especially those of us who might have to work hard at making and taking time to read and reflect. One of the most devoted early workers in our movement, Annie Knott from Detroit, Michigan, writes in her June 3rd, 1905 Christian Science Sentinel editorial titled The Reading Room. She states, "The very atmosphere of Christian Science means good cheer. Having opened our hearts to the Christ idea, we can do no less than welcome to our fellowship all who love the truth. It is to be remembered, however, that the reading room is not intended for Christian Scientists only, but for those as well who are seeking a solace for human misery, an oasis in the desert of their earthly experience. And truly Christian tact is required in order to meet their needs effectively. While all appreciate a kindly welcome, and this may be felt when no words are spoken, many dislike to be questioned as to their interest in Christian Science. When visitors ask questions relating to the teachings of Christian Science, it is often best to point out some passage or passages in our leaders' works which deal specifically with the topic advanced." End of quote. So Annie Knott brings out six key components of a Christian Science reading room. One, the very atmosphere of Christian Science means good cheer. We can all use and share some of that, don't you think? I love this idea. Two, Christian Science Reading Room welcomes to our fellowship all who love the truth. We welcome sincere seekers. Three, the Reading Room is not exclusively for Christian Scientists. It's not a club nor a place to hide from the world. Four, it is an oasis in a desert of earthly experiences. And doesn't that invite us to demonstrate the second great commandment? To love our neighbor as we love ourselves? To express true Christian tact? To borrow Annie's words? Five, there's no need to ask how interested in Christian Science a visitor is, because there's no place for judgment in a reading room. Again, it's the open hand. Six, we have access to the source of all the answers to any question about the teaching of Christian Science. And that endless source is the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's writings. I would add a seventh for the sake of completeness, of course. And it's our own love of Christian Science, a Christian Science way of life, which each of us has led to some degree or another. Sharing from our hearts is sharing from the great heart of divine love. There's nothing more precious or powerful. And so I ask you, is there anything in these points that lacks relevance today? In his insightful article, Spiritual Support for Our Reading Rooms, CSB Alan Aylwin shared this in the October 1972 issue of the Christian Science Journal. He writes, "Branch church reading rooms are vital to the growth of Christian Science, and there is little doubt that the reading rooms which are regularly used and metaphysically supported by the members are the most successful in attracting the interested inquirer. When praying for the reading room, each of us will do it in his own way. But let us make sure that we do pray. We always need to remember that the human institution, church, with all its facets, including the reading room, symbolizes the irresistible penetration and attraction of omnipotent divine principle. Because God, the one and only mind, is all, nothing can obstruct or oppose his omniscience and omniaction. There can be no indifferent, apathetic, inert mortal minds anywhere, for there is no space for them to occupy." End of quote. From everything we know as Christian Scientists in the 21st century, and especially at the beginning of a new year that will undoubtedly reflect unprecedented change, let's ask ourselves a couple of questions. What isn't right about the reading room concept? And whether we are practicing Christian Scientists or worldly seekers and wanderers, who doesn't need a refuge from the world, a quiet place to get closer to God? One interaction I had with the jointly maintained reading room just before COVID remains quite vivid. A fellow came in, he was a theological student, who spent over an hour with me going through the Bible to show me chapter and verse how much we need to be saved due to the rapture and the end times that are coming. It was a wake-up call to me on how important it is to know our pastor, to be able to reference verses that offer the spiritual interpretation of Scripture rather than a personal human interpretation. It was also a wake-up call to fully engage with people of other faiths, not just other Christians, not just to turn away from them because they're not Christian Scientists. My conversation with this earnest young man afforded an opportunity to share who we are, what we stand for, and in that specific instance, to assure him that we are all saved because we are all children of one God, good. We met cordially and we parted friends. Could such a conversation happen in a coffee shop, in a church foyer? Possibly, but it's highly unlikely. The reading room invited us both to sit down together to focus on the most important thing in life, our individual relationship with our Father, Mother, God. Just to put an exclamation point on that most important thing, our relationship with God, I have one more story to tell you. Knowing about this upcoming talk, a friend of mine told me about a woman who walked by a reading room in a small town back east, stopped to read the window display, and immediately walked across the town green to the Christian Science Church, where the Wednesday evening testimony meeting was just getting underway. My friend was a member of the church and spoke with the woman after the service. The friend was searching for God, but had no idea what Christian Science was. She just knew that mainstream religions were far too confining for her. The open hand of the reading room window opened her eyes to a whole different experience. The testimony meeting gave her instant exposure to healing possibilities. The church welcomed her to its services, and she soon attended regularly. A couple of years later, she called my friend and asked her to be the practitioner in support of the process she, her husband, and their young son were embarking on to adopt a daughter from China. The way that case worked out is both one of the most precious things in their lives, both the families and my friends. And not long after, this woman took primary class instruction. Where did it all begin? With a few highlighted citations from our pastor, the Bible in Science and Health, displayed in the window of a small town Christian Science reading room. I recently learned that she is now a journalistic Christian Science practitioner. Pretty neat, isn't it? Our own stories are central to the way we engage with fellow church members and with the outside world. A week or so ago, I heard it said that churches have been shuttered for the longest expanse in 2,000 years due to the pandemic. We have been forced to rethink how we attend and participate in church. For most of us right now, it's on Zoom rather than in person. How grateful we can be for the connectedness that the internet provides. But let's not fall for the belief that human contact is no longer essential, an essential part of life, and that screen contact is all we need. No. Interaction and communing together are cornerstones of brotherly love, Christian outreach, and our shared heritage as the children of one infinite God, good. And in that shared experience, let's continue to pray specifically for how we can best support the ever outward looking Christian Science reading rooms provided for in the manual. At times, we may well feel discouraged by events in the world around us. And I don't think I'm just speaking for myself here. If you want a boost of courage, I highly recommend reading a biography on Mary Baker Eddy. I've been enjoying the Peel trilogy lately. Mrs. Eddy has faced challenges quite similar to ours. They were just dressed in different clothes. Arguments that we're not doing something right, that we have somehow failed, are an invitation to rethink and rekindle, and then to hold our ground and advance. No one understood this or demonstrated this approach more consistently than our leader. Her words, as you well know, are strong. I will follow and rejoice all the rugged way, from hymn 307. You must conquer your own fears as well as those of your patients, from Science and Health, and rise in the strength of spirit to resist all that is unlike good, also from our textbook. These are not defensive or fighting words. They're clear, practical words of fearless courage and forward thinking. Who doesn't want more of that? I'm often reminded of a statement made by CSB and friend Jim Spencer in a talk he gave to the Christian Science Benevolent Association in the early 2000s, entitled, "The Reason for Your Joy." It's an amazing talk. In response to challenges we seem to be facing, he stated emphatically, "Christian Science isn't slowing down. Some Christian scientists may seem to be." End of quote. I like what Paul says to the Galatians. "Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." And truly, as I say it to you, I say that to myself. Now let's consider one of these challenges in a different way. In other words, let's again put it in context. It's my view that a vast number of people today don't know anything about Christian Science, have never heard of it, or of Mrs. Eddy. Or they automatically link it to or confuse it with a well-known ology. How's that for mischievous animal magnetism? Think about what that vast number implies. To me, it means we have a blank canvas to work with, a huge number of people to whom we can offer an open hand. From my vantage point, a lot of people are searching for God. They're seeking a spiritual view because they see a human picture that appears to be hopelessly flawed, if not shattered. The Christian Science Reading Room and the attendants or librarians who serve there offer the open hand that aids their search. That sounds like relevance to me. I firmly believe that a tremendous opportunity for Christian Science is emerging right before our eyes, if we faint not. Here's just one example. Have you heard about the new translation of Science and Health into both simplified and traditional Chinese characters? It's available to read online only, so that refinements to the translation can be made easily without having to recall and reprint hard copy. Now think about this. Nearly 1.4 billion people live in China, certainly a vast number. And within that number, there are millions of unprejudiced minds. Let's just say it's 0.25%. That's 3.5 million people. Just saying. In the second section of this week's lesson on truth, Moses thought he was doing the right thing. But his more seasoned father-in-law, Jethro, essentially said, "I know what you're trying to do, and I can tell you it's not going to work. It will bury you." So let's think about this situation in a different way. Moses thought he needed to control others in order for all to be obedient to God. Jethro pointed out that we all have roles to play, and that it would make all the difference if Moses would let God be God. And it did. Our focus must be on the power of God and His Christ to uplift, reform, redeem, direct, and heal. That infinite good, almighty power, is as effective today as it ever has been and ever will be. We know this. All we need to do is specifically claim it as the truth and then open ourselves to God's infinite ideas, guiding our human footsteps forward. In the First Church of Christ Scientists and Miscellany, Mrs. Eddy tells us, "In love for man, we gain the only true sense of love for God, practical good, and so rise and still rise to his image and likeness, and are made partakers of that mind which springs the universe." In closing, there's no magic formula for a Christian Science reading room to be successful. It's not complicated. It takes work and a commitment to doing it. It requires the power of prayer, including those of the membership, as well as dedicated human effort. The stories that touch us always include an attendant who has devoted time to praying while serving, which invariably draws the seeker, if not several, to the window and then through the open door. Christian Science reading rooms have changed the way they look to remain current with the times, but their purpose, their feel, their outreach to the world, their relevance as the open hand of Christ's truth is truly timeless. Thank you. It was a delight to be with you all today.
Thank you, John. It was brilliant. And you've given me much to think about. I have to tell you, the best experiences I have here is when I, on the way in, I'll say, oh, Father, send me a visitor today. I haven't seen a visitor in a while, and I really want to share this amazing science with someone. And sure enough, I get maybe one or two, and which is, you know, we don't get them every day, but we could. I tell you, yesterday, I prayed that prayer, and I got here, and you know, I was almost an hour late from the time I left, and it's just bad traffic if there had been an event or something, and so I rolled in at 8:45, and then, which meant I stayed till 5, and at 5 o'clock, when I was all ready to, I'm getting ready to go, I went into the ladies' room, and there was a woman in there, and she said, where are you traveling to? I said, I'm not, I work here. She said, where do you work? I said, in the Christian Science reading room. It's the only store in the terminal right now because we're, you know, under construction. She said, oh, I'll come right in. So when she came in, and she had had a 2020 that's worse than most people's, and she said to me, you know, 2020 was so horrible. And she said, the worst thing that happened to me was I lost my husband. And she began to tell me about it. And I'm listening, but I'm also knowing. And finally, when she was done telling me, he had had the same illness, the claim of Stephen Hawking's passed away of. And he said, I said, you know, there's really no death. Nobody dies. You don't experience your own death. We feel it because the person is departed. There's no longer here. But the actual person just is opened up to a brand new, beautiful world where everything's gorgeous. And, you know, there's always joy and there's immortal love. Everything is there. And the people were there at the other end, and they're here, and your family was there. And she told me, you know, all about it, and that the whole family had been there. And I thought, you know, and she said, you know, I have to believe that. And I had told her, Mary Baker Eddy figured out how Jesus healed. I read this book about it. And I said, I learned it in that book. And she said, oh, and her ride was coming. She was trying to direct him to our door right outside the reading room. And so I think she will come back when she's ready to. She's here visiting some people in San Francisco because she used to live here for a long time. And she's kind of back here reminiscing whether all her favorite trips were with her husband. But she'll be back and she will study some more Christian Science because it was a happy party. I mean, she actually had the first joy I think I saw in her eyes.